WBCA Radio is proud to present City Talk, where fascinating conversation is alive and well, with your host, Boston radio veteran Ken Meyer.
Hello again, everybody. It's Ken Meyer, and welcome to a very special edition of City Talk. Those of you who watch WCVB TV Channel 5 are very privileged, as I am, to watch Maria Stefanos every day. But I got one up on you because she's sitting right here in the studio. So we have the brass ring. And Maria, you don't need any hair or makeup to do this.
Oh, which is what I love about it. It's so wonderful to be here.
Well, thank you,
Ken. You're so wonderful and so kind, and I'm a big fan.
Well, I hope you will be when we get finished.
Oh, well, believe that. Well, I don't know. Let's see. Let's wait and see.
All right, let's do that. You were named after your grandmother.
Yes, I was. I was named after my grandmother, both of my grandmothers, Maria and Mary. And I think that's a Greek thing. I think it's just what we do. We just continue those names down. So,
tell me where you grew up.
I grew up in Groveland, Massachusetts, which is near Newburyport and Haverhill. But my mom grew up right around here, right around all around us where we are right now in these studios.
I was always fascinated with radio growing up. What, when, and how did you get the bug for journalism to do what you do?
I love that question. First of all, genuinely, when I was a kid, I used to listen to Jess Kane, religiously Larry Glick. I loved radio.
Yeah, it was my buddy Larry Glick.
Yep, it was an important part of our lives. And then Jerry Williams.
Yep.
And my grandmother would listen to that religiously. And she loved talk radio. It was her connection to the world. And I also watched Channel 5. I would watch the Sunrise, the Eye Opener with Jim Boyd and Susan Burke. And I could not wait to just get up before the sunrise and sit there and wait for my TV to warm up because I'm that old, Ken, okay?
I'm familiar with it. I'm familiar with it.
And I would watch it, and I loved it. I thought it was amazing.
What made you pick Emerson College?
My dad took some classes there, and certainly it was known for journalism. And it was just a terrific school. And my daughter, just this past Sunday, graduated from Emerson College. So the tradition continues.
When you went to Emerson, you got involved in some kind of rally in Washington, D.C. and drove a bunch of people down there?
How do you know that information? How did you get that?
I watch YouTube, honey.
Oh.
Good old YouTube.
Oh, I try to stay off the internet and write my name in there. I can tell you that. But what it was that there was a protest going on, and I said, let's not cover it from here. Let's get in the car. And we drove overnight, and I had a beat-up Suzuki convertible. The convertible didn't work anymore, and we were driving there in 40-degree temperatures. But you know what? We went there. We learned. We saw what a protest was about in our nation's capital. We did our story. We jumped back in the car and drove back, and we put the story together.
And how were you – did you do air work at Emerson?
Did I do what?
Air work. Were you on the air?
Oh, yes, I did. Yeah. But I liked production more. I wasn't interested in being on TV. I wanted to learn how you got everything done before you went on to television. That was more interesting to me.
Interesting. And were you really a waitress at Cheers?
Yes, I was a waitress at Cheers. That was one of the greatest experiences. And Ken, that really prepped me for what it is I do today. Think about it. You have to walk over to a table. You have to charm them and be nice to them and remember their names, remember their orders, juggle a million things, which is when there's breaking news, you juggle a lot of things in your head. And it really was a great way to learn how to talk to people and be kind to them.
I could never be a waiter.
Why not?
Because if somebody complained to me about a steak not being done well enough or something burned, I'd just say to them, look, eat it or wear it.
No, you wouldn't. I don't believe it for 1 minute. I don't believe it. You're too nice for that, Ken.
Your natural progression after you left Emerson, you started at BUR, I think. Is that right?
I did NPR. I worked up at the State House, actually, and I would feed the sound to all a number of NPR stations, and I wanted to be on so badly, and they kept rejecting me, saying, "You talk too fast, you're too loud, and your voice just doesn't work for NPR," which is true. It worked out. I think I did okay. So,
All right, the natural progression after NPR, I believe you worked in Providence, yes?
I did. I actually sent my tape here to someone at New England Cable News and hoped, really crossed my fingers, that they would look at it. And the woman who was in charge, and I won't say her name, but I'll never forget her name, she called me and she said, "I have no impetus to even look at your tape."
Oh, my God.
And I was crushed and I thought, "You won't even look at it. How can you even give me a chance?" And somehow the next day, the NBC station in Providence called me and said, "We looked at it. You have no experience, but there's something about you. Why don't you come down?" And I did it, and I got the job, and that was the beginning. I was so grateful, so grateful.
And you were there how long?
I was there 3 years, and it was really a spectacular way to get into this business because Buddy Cianci was on trial.
Ah, yes.
And I sat in that courtroom every day. I had no idea what I was doing, but let me tell you, Ken, I learned quickly.
I'll bet. Now, 18 years at Fox, a very innovative network and very aggressive. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of those 18 years.
Oh, they were very special, and we were growing, and we didn't know what we were doing at the beginning, and we were really trying to find our way. And we just realized that if you were just yourselves, maybe that would be the breakthrough. And you know what? It was. And some good programming. American Idol certainly helped put us on the map. The Simpsons, right? Those Sunday night shows certainly had people saying, "Oh, what is this?" And it was a long, slow progression. And we would go out into the field and try to interview politicians and certain people. And they would look at us and almost snicker at us saying, "Who are you? We don't even know who you are." But eventually, they knew who we were. And it was a great source of pride to work there and the things that we did there. I mean, we made mistakes. We all do.
Oh, sure. Tell us the Pope story.
Which Pope story? Okay.
How do you know?
You are the best researcher I think I've ever met in my entire 53 years.
Oh, I got to play that for my wife.
So I was sitting up on the news set, and the Pope was gravely ill, and we were waiting for him to pass, and we were standing by, and we knew it was going to be imminent. And the producer got into my ear. I wear an earpiece, and the producer said,
IFB for those.
IFB, yes. I have mine in my pocketbook. We need to put it on. And yeah. They said, the Fox is reporting, so that was our parent company, that the Pope has died, and you need to go with it. And I said that the Pope had died and the Pope had not died in that moment. And then I had to take it back immediately. "I'm sorry, we got some misinformation." So it was certainly not one of the finer moments in my career, but mistakes happen. And I corrected it, and that's what you do.
9/11, you were involved in that.
Horrible.
Did you go to New York or
I actually went to – no, I went to the Pentagon. I went to D.C., so we – got in the cars. We were all hands on deck when big stories happen, as you know. And I got in the car and drove to Washington, D.C. Very eerie. No planes were flying. Just a heartbreak. Just a true heartbreak. And I drove there and covered it from there. And then when I got back here, they said, "You live in Foxborough. We need you to contact this woman, Cindy McGinty, who also lives in Foxborough." And let me tell you, Ken, the worst part of this job is to walk up to a door and knock on that door and with a camera and say, "I'm sorry." I always make sure that I leave that camera down. But I knock on the door and I say, "My camera's not is here. I want to know if you would let me speak with you." And Cindy McGinty opened that door, and she never closed it on me. And we've been friends to this day.
You know, that's a tough thing. And we always talk about things like that, Maria. You know, when you interview somebody and you ask them the question, "How do you feel?" I mean, what are you supposed to say after you lose a loved one with a question? And that's a question that everybody seems to ask.
So what would you, but what would you, what would you want to be asked, Ken? I ask you that.
What would I want to be asked? Mm. Probably my memories of somebody that I had lost.
Brilliant. Yes.
What I will take with me for the rest of my life.
Excellent. And that's how I try to do it,
things
too.
Things like that.
Yes. Remember, this is what I always say to people. Remember your mother for me. Remember your husband for me. What did he do every day? What was his favorite thing to do on the weekends? That's how I try to approach it. But I learned that the hard way.
It's funny because I remember my parents, my radio, I had a radio for them at home. I always had it set on WBZ. And every Saturday night, my father would stay up until midnight, which was when I went on the air. And they would turn on a tape recorder and tape the first 2 or 3 hours of the show.
How beautiful.
And the next day, I would get a critique.
I'm sure they loved it. Did they love it?
Oh, absolutely. Beautiful. Absolutely. And I will tell you, when we got a book where I was going to do an interview, I'd send it home to my dad and I'd say, read this book for me. And he would stay up and tape it so that he could hear the interview that he had done. And I could always tell when he enjoyed the book.
How?
Well, there was one book. It was called The Burning Bed. And it was a story of wife abuse.
No, I know the book.
And Farrah Fawcett did the movie on television. And I'd call my dad and I'd say, how's the book coming? And he'd say, oh, geez, the guy did this, you know, and he pulled his wife's hair and shoved her face in the garbage and this and this and this. And if he didn't like the book, I'd say to him, how's the book? And he'd say, yeah, it's okay.
Ah, you would know right away. That's terrific. Is he still with us, Ken?
No.
I'm sorry.
No, my dad died in 95.
Wow.
And my mom in 2003, but I was thrilled to death that they were alive to see the success that I had.
Me too.
At both WBZ and WBEI, which brings up another point. I love to interview. I think it's a lost art, mm-hmm. and you are very good at it. Now, I may be wrong in what I'm saying. It doesn't seem like you're doing as many interviews as you used to.
Well, stand by for that because I am doing a primetime special for July. So yes, you're right. I don't do it that as much, but they're now giving me a primetime spot at WCVB where I can do these interviews, and that's my love, my true passion. I love talking to people and learning about them, as you do too.
Exactly. Exactly. And I have also found that if somebody knows the person that they're interviewing, like I know about you, the other person enjoys nothing more than talking about themselves.
Not right. Not me.
Really?
I like that. No, it's all I can do to not ask you a million questions.
Oh, you can. You can. As soon as we're finished, I'll tell you anything you want to know.
I don't like being on the other side. I do not.
Really?
But I do it for you. Yes.
Well, let's the other question that absolutely crops up after 18 years, what made you leave Fox to go to Channel 5? Did they just contact you out of the blue and say, "Hey, we want you"? Or
no, that's a good question. I had always been a huge fan of Channel 5, even though I had worked at Fox. That was my opportunity. I was not experienced enough to work at Channel 5 when I first came to the Boston market, and a new company came in and bought Fox, and they were very kind to me and wanted me to stay. But I was at a point in my life, I was just about to turn 50, and I said, what do I do here? My contract is up. They asked me to stay, which was wonderful, and they were very good to me. And that was home for me, comfort zone. And I said, you know, I have an opportunity here to really explore and see what else is out there. And I had already always been friendly with the people at Channel 5, and I explored what was out there. And after exploring, I realized, let me take this leap. And it was not easy, but I did it. And 3 years later, I'm incredibly grateful. We're on the top for the ratings, and I work with the most incredible people. And you know what, Ken? I still talk to my friends at Fox just about every day. So I try not to – it's not one against the other. I like to think of us all as one big family with one common goal, which is to inform people.
Yep, and Channel 5 does that. Let's talk about three interviews.
Oh, boy.
Tom Menino.
Love Love my Tom Menino. Yes.
My friend Jackie Goddard said to me that's the most comfortable she had ever seen him in an interview.
What a compliment. Thank you, Jackie. I love you, Jackie.
So do I. I've known Jackie since 1991.
You worked with her, right?
Yes.
Yes, I know.
I did.
I remember.
At the mayor's press office.
Yep.
But Tom Menino, David Ortiz, and the one that I am extremely interested in, John Dennis.
Oh, all right. So you want to take one at a time?
I'll let you lead. All right. Start with Tom Menino.
Tom Menino was always my favorite interview because I would go in and I talked to Tom Menino like I would talk to anybody. And he liked being called mayor and he loved being a mayor, but he gave me, and he would do this with a lot of people, he gave me such a hard time and I'd give it right back. And that's what made a great interview and certainly was always respectful. I was always respectful, but I had no problem pushing him back on anything. He would say something, I'd say, come on, are you kidding me? And he'd come right back at me. And that, to me, that's what made him such a pleasure to interview. I loved my time with him every time.
And David Ortiz, are you a sports fan?
Oh, are you kidding? I'm a huge sports fan.
I just thought I'd ask. Just wanted to make sure.
You knew the answer to that. And my mother was the biggest Red Sox fan, I think, on the planet. And I love David Ortiz because he just had this finesse about him, an unapologetic, I am the star of this show. And, you know, I'll tell you, when I interviewed him, he was larger than life. And within 2 minutes, he was just like everybody else. I asked him what he likes to eat. I didn't ask him I didn't ask him regular questions. I said, what do you like to eat? Ceviche. He loves that. I asked him, do you read? I asked him questions that I'm not sure most people ask him on a daily basis. And he settled right in, and it was great. We had fun.
That's different than saying, well, who's the toughest pitcher you ever faced?
He doesn't need to answer that, right?
Yeah,
I wanted to get a different side of David Ortiz.
Exactly.
And I talked a lot about his mom. And you see a different side of people when you talk about people that they love that you don't normally see.
In his book, Big Poppy, there's a whole big section about his mother.
Big influence.
And when she passed away and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I ate at his restaurant.
Oh, I forgot about that. That was in Framingham, right?
Yes, yes.
How was it?
It was excellent.
Ah.
It was excellent. I wish it was still in business.
Ah, too bad.
I wish it was still in business.
Yeah.
Now, I obviously, like you, love broadcasting. I'm fascinated to hear people behind the scenes and what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very interested in John Dennis.
Okay. In what way?
Because I used to listen to him in the morning.
Booming voice. Great
exactly.
voice.
Commanding
presence.
He had the guts to admit he was an alcoholic and got himself cured and decided he was going to retire. And the one thing that I remember is you asked him about Kurt Menahan, who has since left that radio station, and all he would say was complicated.
Right, and I left it at that.
Yeah, I know.
Because I felt that that's all that he needed to say. It's not my job to get into the weeds of perhaps a toxic situation. I don't want to be that kind of reporter.
Right.
I want to just keep it. And that doesn't mean I'm not afraid to ask that question, Ken. But it just meant when he said complicated, I just let that linger. And I thought, don't say anything more.
Yeah. Yeah, I would do the same thing. There's such a thing as a dramatic pause.
Exactly. And I let that linger.
And, you did what I did. I interviewed Connie Francis once.
Oh, beautiful.
And she told me about the night she was raped at a hotel.
Oh, my.
Howard Johnson's hotel, which she eventually sued. And I said to her, because she told the guy who, when he was doing what he did, who she was, and he left her alone. And I said to her then, I said, Connie, if you hadn't have told him or he didn't know who you were, do you think you and I would be sitting here today? And she took my hand and very quietly said, no.
Wow. Wow. And then did you let it?
I just paused and said, okay, let's talk about something else.
Wow.
But I never, ever forgot that.
Sure. I wouldn't either.
And all right. Now, talk about February 1st, 2016.
February 1st, 2016.
That was your first day at Channel 5.
Oh, yes. I can't believe I'm thinking. You know, when you say February 1st, I always think there was some snowstorm that was horrendous that I have to remember. That was surreal. It was surreal. I had been... It's not easy to take a leap and go to some place that's totally foreign to you, even though it's the same business. But I walked in and... It was very different, and it was people couldn't have been nicer. Ed Harding, so incredibly welcoming. Mike Lynch, you know, I had seen a lot of these people out in the field as well, but it was I'll tell you, it was difficult. But to leave your comfort zone, and to go to a place where you have to prove yourself again, which I was okay with. It was a growing experience, and I'm appreciative for the opportunity.
But I don't think you had to prove yourself. You had 18 years behind you.
Right, Ken, but this was a totally different place. Fox was this place where, you know, this is Channel 5.
Right.
Channel 5.
Yeah, I know.
Right?
I
right?
Know.
Tried and true, and Natalie Jacobson and Chuck Curtis and the legends and the history of Channel 5. And I have great reverence for that. I just have such respect. Not that I didn't have respect for Fox. I had great respect for that. I helped, you know, I helped grow it, and I enjoyed every single moment of it. It was profoundly different, and I was humbled at being there.
How'd you like Atlanta? How'd you like the Super Bowl?
Oh, okay. I love that Super Bowl so much because I could not believe. Do you know my dad used to go to Schaefer Stadium and Sullivan Stadium, and they were the worst. But he didn't care because he'd go with all his Greek friends, and they would go out and tailgate. And this is a lifelong thing for all of these fans. And now we're winning and winning and winning and winning. And I couldn't believe we did it again. It was magical, like it was the first time. And I've been to many Super Bowls. Incredible.
Your station starts news coverage in the afternoon at 4 o'clock.
Yes.
And goes until 7:30 at night. Mm. You dropped Inside Edition. And you're also doing a 7 o'clock newscast up against a Wheel of Fortune.
Yes.
Do you think that maybe they're doing too much news?
Do you think I'm going to answer that question, Ken?
Probably not. But I thought I would ask you
that. I have two college tuitions to pay for.
You can answer it off the air. But
no, I think I think everybody is doing a lot of news, and we're getting all of our information on our phones, on the radio. You can literally access news 24/7. Do I think we're doing that? Yes, I think there's a lot of news to be had, but this is a market that can support it. Every single day, we have the most incredible stories and devastating stories and wonderful stories. Truly, this market is supporting it. It's not that we're in a place where there's not news and we're trying to get things generated. This supports it. And think about it. You come home at 4 o'clock, you want to watch it, then you can go away. Maybe you're someone who comes home at 6 o'clock and watch it. Yep. Then you go and have your dinner. You say you watch it at 6 o'clock. There are people who can't come home by 6 o'clock because the traffic is so atrocious. They can watch it at 7. And there are people who like to end their day and watch it at 11. So I do believe that there are different audiences for each half an hour. And I think that that's what you'll see, sampling, people coming in, people leaving, people more people coming in and then leaving. So there are different audiences.
I would like to see another news radio station in this city.
So would I.
Well, good. Let's start one.
All right. I like that. I'm getting on in years. I'm ready to do. No, I'm kidding.
Call it WMAR Maria.
All right. I like that. I'm going to combine your name. I love this. This is great.
Why not? We got nothing to lose.
Why not? I agree with you. I think that is a worthy voice, an important voice. I truly do. I need to listen to that. It's the way I begin my day.
Yeah. But it seems to me with the internet and the iPhone and all this stuff, I would think television stations would be afraid of it. And maybe that's why they're doing so much news.
I don't know. I think that once one person does it, everybody else does it as well. You have to compete. And you have to provide what everybody else is doing. But you have to do it in a respectful, responsible way. And I do know that Channel 5 does that because I see how the sausage is made every single day.
All right. Journalism. Tweeting. People like the President of the United States get involved in tweeting.
Mm-hmm.
Do you like that? I mean, somebody told me once that somebody tweeted about a woman's hair at a press conference. You think that's going a little overboard?
I think that it's—
I mean, you don't do it.
I'm very careful on Twitter, and I try to keep it— I really try to curate a very positive experience there. And I do not write about politics. I do not— it's not my job. That's not my job. Right. But I love to engage with people on Twitter. So that's how I maintain it. Do I get attacked on Twitter, Facebook, in comment sections? Absolutely.
Really?
It can be so vicious. Vicious. Does it bother me? Yes. I'm a human being. So I take that into account. Ken, anytime I type something out, I always say, I would never write anything that I would not say on television. It's never going to come out of my fingertips if I wouldn't say it out of my mouth.
All right. Again, it must be my naivete, but you're an anchor.
Yes.
I mean, how can they criticize you reading the news?
Wow. That's actually a heavy question, and I would like to know the answer to it. But I will tell you, I think people just, it's, do you like the color blue or do you like the color red? Well, maybe they don't like the color red. They like the color blue. I think it's just a personal opinion. And I think that I am a strong cup of coffee. And there are people who say, nope, I don't like her at all. She's brash. She's this, she's that. And that's their personal taste. They don't know me, but I respect that that's how they feel. Right?
Yeah, but after people are on the air for a while, they think they know you. And sometimes you don't, at least I never did until I was working, the impact that you have on the population of this city because of your being on the air. I again, will share a story with you. I was at an event at Boston Garden for the Special Olympics. Bobby Orr was there and a couple of other. Rico Petrocelli was there.
I love Rico and Bobby.
And a gentleman came up to me and said, are you Ken Meyer? And I said, yep. And he said, I just want you to know that my wife used to listen to you every week from Revere, and you kept her alive on Saturday nights.
Oh,
I never,
that's everything.
I never forgot something like that. But it makes you realize— I played an interview one night that I did with Joe Garagiola after a Patriots game on a Monday night. And somebody called me and said, you know, that was the best traffic jam I was ever in my life.
Oh, that's terrific. Now, that's the best compliment right there. It's when you don't want to get out of your car because the interview is so good. And that's a compliment to you, Ken.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you must get compliments like that because you do good interviews.
No, thank you. I will say the majority of people are absolutely wonderful and kind. And when I talk about the negativity, that's a very small part of it, very small. And I choose to focus on the light, not the negative. I won't do that.
All right. Tell me about a day in Maria Stefanos's life.
Oh, my. Did I tell you that I don't like being interviewed?
You did mention
that. Oh, I just want to make sure I did that.
Did I tell you how much I'm enjoying this?
Oh, good for you. You have me twisting over here. This is a good interview, I have to say. I've been interviewed a lot, and you are probably the best.
Well,
and I'm not saying that because I'm sitting in front of you.
I appreciate that.
Your recall is incredible. The day in the life, I wake up pretty early. I go to bed. I get home very early morning, midnight, 12:30. And I wake up very early because I don't like to miss a moment. And I read the Globe and the New York Times, you know, in hard copy. And then I go online. I look at my email. First thing I do is look at my ratings, for sure, because you're measured every day. And I look at that, and I eat a wonderful breakfast, and then I work out, and I'll cook something because I live to cook. I'm a Greek mother. I love it. And I live for it, and then I like to bake. And when my kids are in at college, I will bake things for the newsroom. And I go to work and I just dive into it every single day. And I try to feed my mind with as much information as possible prior to going to work. And then I go to work and we take it from there.
Do you help with any rewrite? Because you don't go on the air until 4:30.
I rewrite.
Okay, that was my next question.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, okay.
Because I want my voice on there and I want to make sure we're saying the right thing, not saying the Stanley Cup Finals, but the Stanley Cup Final and Attorneys General instead of Attorney Generals. You know, I try to make sure that what comes out of my mouth is correct. I'm not always perfect, not even close, but I certainly put my eyeballs on everything and write and rewrite and do all of that.
And what happens from 7:30 to 11 o'clock?
7:30, I go and FaceTime my husband or my son or my daughter, depending on where they are. And I have my dinner. And then I do that for a half an hour. So I spend time with my family, you know, even though it's through the phone, because I've worked nights for all of their lives. And then at 8 o'clock, you get right back at it. And we have a 10 o'clock news on MeTV and the 11 o'clock. So I start prepping for that. And I start how I started my day, scanning all these websites. I go back and look at everything again and get on Twitter and just consume information.
How much, if any, did the press contribute to the election of Donald Trump?
How do I answer that question? I mean, I think the press contributes to the election of all the presidents. How's that for an answer? I think that it's up to you to decide what it is you want to take away from whatever the press is reporting.
I don't know. This administration seems – I remember I interviewed Gary LaPierre, and I said to him, with all the stuff that's happening now after you've retired, would you like to go back for just one day and do the news? And he said, no.
Why?
He just is content, was content with watching it unfold. And he was, I got to tell you, he was one of the best newsmen in
ever.
The world. He was like the Tom Ellis of radio.
Yes, he was. Oh, I have a great Tom Ellis story, but go ahead. This is your interview.
I went to Tom Ellis's wedding when he got married.
You did?
I did.
How beautiful.
I went with Larry Glick to his wedding when he got married.
Oh.
And I knew Tom for many, many years. He did a feature about me on Channel 5, which I was very
He did?
Good.
I have to
yes,
go
he did.
To the archives when I get back there.
Yeah, I don't remember now when he did it, but it was a while. Well, obviously, it was a while ago because he was still working. And would you like to see more local TV talk shows?
Of course I would.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. That's an unheard voice now. Yes, I would love to see that. I think it would be fantastic. Is there a market for it now? I don't know. Everybody's so consumed with so many other different things. Everything we do is just – it's cannibalized by our phones.
I would love to think so because when I was at BZ, everybody had their own – I mean, we had People Are Talking.
Right.
We had Paul Benziquin doing a show on Channel 7.
Yes.
You had, if you'll pardon the expression, the look on Channel 7, but apparently everybody looked the other way because the show didn't last.
No, that's fair to say.
But Channel 5 had the Good Morning Show, and they had—
With Eileen Prose.
Right, Eileen mm-hmm. Prose and John Willis. Mm-hmm. And then they had a talk show late at night with Hubert Jessup.
Oh, right, right.
Which I also happened to be on once. Hmm. And I kind of missed that because you never knew who you're going to run into. I mean, I walked in one night for the Glick Show, ran into Muhammad Ali out in the lobby.
Wow, a legend.
Another day you walk in and there's Jane Fonda. You know, oh, hello.
Right. Oh, hi. Nice to see you here.
Are you having a good day?
But of all the stations, we do some really incredible local programming. We have City Line with the great Karen Holmes Ward, and we have OTR on the record with Ed Harding and Janet Wu. And we have Chronicle every single night that does an incredible rating. Still local television. We do that right.
I'm surprised that it's lasted this long.
I'm not.
Because other shows that started, like Evening Magazine on Channel 4 with Robin Young.
Yep. Phenomenal.
Oh, absolutely. She got one of the first interviews with somebody I would have died for to interview Johnny Carson.
Oh, yes. She what timing on that man?
Interview Johnny Carson. Oh, I loved him.
Yep. We could do.
We could do an hour on him. Yeah. I saw him perform at Chateau de Ville once.
Chateau de Ville?
Yep.
Now you're going way back.
Yep, I'm going way back. And it's funny. I will tell you, you know how he'd ask a question? You know, he'd say, it was so hot today. And the audience would say, how hot was it? And he'd say, it was so hot that I saw Robin fry an egg on the sidewalk. So he was on stage. And we were lucky enough to have seats like right down in front. I could have reached over and untied his shoes if I wanted to. And he said, you know, athletes are weird people. And I thought, sure, the whole audience was going to say, how weird are they? And I was the only one who said it. And he walked to the edge of the stage and he looked at me and he said, I'll bet you paid a lot of money to come in here to say that, didn't you? And I said, yes, sir. And it was worth every penny.
That is terrific. What a terrific story. Wasn't Ed McMahon from Haverhill too?
Lowell.
Yes, Lowell. That's it.
He was from Lowell, Massachusetts.
Yeah, local boy.
Yep. And did a lot with Johnny, of course, and Star Search. And same thing with Channel 5. David Muir worked at Channel 5.
What a wonderful person David Muir is. He really, truly is.
Yeah, we watch his newscasts every night.
He's terrific.
In our house.
He's a kind person.
Did you ever have an interview that got away?
You mean that somebody else had that I wanted?
Or just one that you tried and couldn't get? Both cases.
Oh, certainly. I guess I should think of who it is, but I don't give up.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say that they've gotten away yet because I will not give up. I will always go back to that well and keep trying.
Well, like for example, I was supposed to interview Mickey Mantle. And I got very friendly with the publicist and, you know, once he was sick, then he was this, then he was that. And finally she said, look, he's just not going to make it. You know, forget it. And I had purchased ball games that featured him hitting home runs that I would have played in the interview. I was never so disappointed in my life because Mickey Mantle was my hero when I was growing up. I was a big Yankee fan in those days, and I loved guys like Mantle and Maris and all that stuff. But what for you is a highlight that you will always take with you, either from Fox or from Channel 5?
I think it's a more general highlight. I think it's the people that I've been so fortunate enough to get to know through an interview. And I can't even say one person. I will say Howie Bernstein was in Iwo Jima. And that was a life-changing interview for me because I sat in this room in his son's home and it was this tribute to his dad. And it was like being in a museum and it was really just a room. And I felt like I was with Howie every step of that war as he documented it for me. And I'll tell you, it was so moving, so powerful, and I just couldn't believe all the stories he told me. I was just speechless. He was Jewish. He wanted to put a Jewish star on his bag, and they wouldn't let him. They said, CRP, you put Catholic or Protestant, and he refused to do it. Every single thing. And then when he passed away, his family asked me to give the eulogy, which I thought, what? You don't want me to give the eulogy? So I think that was the most memorable, an interview that changed who I was and made me really realize what people have gone through. And it really opened my eyes to something that I would never have known if I didn't interview Howie Goldstein.
Is there anybody that you want to interview right now?
You. I want this to turn right now. Okay. I want you to take the microphone, and I'm going to ask you the questions.
Well, we got a couple minutes. Go ahead. I don't mind. This is very informal.
Okay. Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Rochester, New York.
Okay.
I got interested in radio almost from the beginning. I was around to be involved in old-time radio. So I used to be able to listen to the Lone Ranger and Sergeant Preston of the Yukon and soap operas like The Romance of Helen Trent and Our Gal Sunday. Mm. And I used to make up radio shows. Mm. I would turn on the tape recorder and play records and pretend I was a DJ.
Could you hit the song?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I would record newscasts from the radio, make it sound like it was part of my program. And everything, because I just loved radio so much, and I never dreamed that I would get you know, to where I was and get into the Mass Broadcasters Hall of Fame. Mm. I was very lucky. I met a gentleman in Rochester in 1965 who worked at a 50,000-watt station similar to BZ Radio as far as power and prestige, and his name was Bill Givens, and he just changed the course of my life. He was a wonderful man. He died much too young. He died at 53 years old in 1973. He had just come home from doing an interview with Don Cherry, who was the coach of the Rochester Americans before he came to Boston, went upstairs to change his clothes, dropped dead in the bathroom. But he was a great influence on my life. I miss him to this day. He would allow me to come into the radio station, and I would actually watch him do his radio show when they had records. Remember records?
Yes, I have many in my home. Yes.
And I remember when I was still in high school, I went to him and I said, Bill, I want to get into radio. And he said, Kenny, he said, you're in a business where people got to read. And he said, you know, the stuff that they're going to read is obviously in print. And I said, yeah, but, you know, there are people that can't see that are in this business. Mm-hmm. And one of them worked with Willard Scott from the Today Show in Washington, D.C. And I said, Bill, everybody should have at least the chance to fail. And he agreed. He wrote me a letter of recommendation to the president of an outfit called Graham Junior College, which is no longer in existence. I went there for 2 years. I didn't want a four-year school. I had had it with school. I hated it. And I met a gentleman there named Dick Walsh, who was an engineer at WEEI when it was a CBS O&O. And he also was a great mentor. And I credit him with a great deal of the success that I had.
And are you more like your mother or are you more like your father?
Both. My mother taught me the friendliness of people and how to enjoy music. My father taught me my love of sports. So I would say both.
Beautiful combination.
To that question.
I mean, I don't like the Yankees part of it. But that's I'll forgive you.
But that was so much fun back then. It was great.
Yeah, for you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that was the only – well, all the stations around there would broadcast Yankee games. And, of course, that's when people like Mal Allen and Red Barber and my pal Phil Rizzuto were all in their heyday as far as broadcasting. Mm-hmm. And I loved it. You didn't have hour-long pre-game shows. If a game started at 8:05, they'd hit the air at 7:55. This game's brought to you by Atlantic Imperial Gasoline and Ballantine Beer, and bingo, away we go.
Look at you. That was perfect. You're hired.
Oh, good.
You did a great job.
So are you. Listen, I can't thank you enough for coming in here. I have looked forward to this. We still watch you every day, and if anyone wants to talk to me about a highlight, you're it.
Oh, no. You say that to everybody.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
No, I've only said it to other people, Larry Ruttman and Joyce Gohawick.
Oh, I love Joyce.
I do, too. Joyce is adorable.
She really is. She's wonderful.
She is adorable. I miss entertainment reporting.
And that is a lost art. Yes, I do too. That was such a special thing that we did here. Yes, I agree with you.
You had her. You had Dixie Watley and Sarah Edwards.
Yes. Oh, Sarah's terrific too.
Yep, yep. I miss all that. Television has changed. Well, everything has changed. Sometimes I wonder for the better. Mm-hmm. Certainly news has advanced with the portable equipment and cameras and everything and all that. And you have to be grateful for that. But there are things that are missing that...
Like what?
Well, like just what we talked about, the entertainment, for example. I used to love those segments. Mm-hmm. Loved it.
What was nice after you had this long list of horrible stories to be able to change the mood a little bit and talk about things like that? I'm with you.
Mike Lynch...
Great. Legend.
Absolutely.
Legend.
What's going to happen? Do you have any idea? Is Bob Halloran going to be full-time, or are they going to?
He's full-time anyway, but I don't know if he'll be the full-time. I think they're just exploring everything. I mean, Mike has had such an incredible career.
37 years.
It's incredible. And he, you know what I love the most about Mike Lynch is how passionate he is about high school sports.
Yep.
And highlighting the high five.
Yep.
And to me, that's a kid who grew up in Swampscott, never forgot his roots. That's
yep.
all.
Yep. Yep.
And he's still that man on television who's really that boy who grew up in Swampscott. I just adore that about him. He loves his mother, talks to his mother every day, and he really is a sports legend.
Listen, I have really enjoyed this. I hate to end it. Because I know I got a good thing and I don't want to end it, but but you've been absolutely terrific, and I appreciate your coming in here, and I hope a lot more people are going to sit down and watch you on Channel 5, and I won't stop. I won't change the station, I promise.
If I have the Ken seal of approval, I think that's all I need.
You got it, kid.
I love it.
And that will do it for this edition of City Talk. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening to another great conversation with Ken Meyer and friends. You can contact Ken by email. The address is kjmeyer7@gmail.com. That's kjmeyer7@gmail.com. Tune in next time for more conversation with Ken Meyer on City Talk.